Welcome to the annual budget hearings for the City and County of Denver's next fiscal year. This session of the annual budget hearings begins now.
I'm not sure if I'm saying this, but did we save the best for last? I'm not really saying it. It's just a question. I want to say thank you so much, colleagues, Denver Parks and Rec, for being here as well to present during the final presentation of the second day of Budget Day. My name is Darrell Watson. I'm honored to serve all of the residents within the Fine District 9, and I have the pleasure of facilitating this budget presentation this afternoon. We're gonna do something a little bit different with the questions and answers, so I wanted to share that up front. We're gonna have the queue build up from City Council members for questions for Denver Parks and Rec. We're gonna go around to everyone in the queue, every City Council member. You'll get a chance to ask your very direct questions, Councilmember Lewis and everyone else, Executive Director Clark. Executive Director Clark will respond to questions. Any questions that does not get answered, we can then send an email to Angela Casillas by midnight tomorrow, and those questions will come back to the team by Monday from the department. Is that correct, Angela?
Yep.
Good deal. So we have...
I have a question.
Yes.
Clarify. So what I heard you say was, we're gonna all ask questions.
Yes.
And then the director, Clark, our friend colleague, could put them in themes and buckets, and then some of us will have similar themes, and then you can choose to answer which ones you want to rise to the top on the camera, and then the rest would go to Angela and team, correct?
You can bucket it away, Executive Director. So yes, we'll encourage you with that big brain and full knowledge of all of this to bucket it up and get it out to us. Categories, buckets, however you want to do it. And with no further ado, once again, thanks everyone for being here. Thank you all for participating. And we turn it over to the Executive Director. Once the mayor gets here, he'll have a few opening words, but sir, I'll turn it over to you to start.
All right, well, thank you very much. I'm Joel Clark, Executive Director, Denver Parks and Recreation. Excited to be here today, so thank you, Council President Pro Tem, members of Council. Mr. Chair, I didn't think that this moment could get more full circle for me, having sat over there and being up here, until I realized you would be presiding over this meeting, which took me back to when you were the Chair of the Parks and Rec Advisory Board, and I was recently appointed by the Chris Nevitt, Councilman for District 7, serving on your board. And so things are really coming back full circle in many ways for me today. So I'm so excited to be here with you today. I also have my team. We have filled up the seats. This is the most epic phone-a-friends room you will ever be in for parks. So we may have people popping up from all over the place, depending on what those questions are. But I'm gonna take us through the presentation here to start. Mayor, I understand you might want to go now or before I jump in, or?
I'm happy to let you lead on them if you're ready to, or if you want me to jump in, I'm happy to. But I think if you want to go, feel free. Or do you want me to do slide one?
I'll do it if you need help.
Cashman would like to do it, actually. No, Joel, you're good. You just lead, and if you need me, tell me to jump in, and I'll be happy to.
Awesome. All right. Thank you very much. All right. Well, as we jump in, as a reminder, we have an enormous and amazing system with Parks and Recreation. Last Friday, I started my morning out at Daniels Park, which as a kid who grew up here, I had never been to, I'd never seen before, hanging out with the bison, one of which was like hiding in a bush as I was opening a gate for the tree. I went over to one of our recreation centers and playing some foosball with some kids who were there as the place that they go every day after their school. But as a reminder, we have more than 320 urban parks, parkways, and natural areas totaling over 7,000 acres in the city. We also have more than 14,000 acres in our mountain parks, which is really one of a kind in the nation. Our mountain park system predates the national park system. The folks, I'm gonna say that again, our mountain park system predates the national park system. The folks, the leaders in Denver, were already thinking about preserving and setting aside and protecting land in the mountains before our parks, our national park system. It is really a very special system that we have. We have 24 lakes. Here's a fun fact about lakes. Sloan's Lake, one of our 24, represents 50% of the water acreage, surface acreage, of all of our parks. So it's one park, but it's half of our acreage for parks. And we also have over 87,000 park trees, 187,000 right-of-way trees. You see the number of trees citywide up here. 90 miles of off-street trails, over 670 athletic fields and sports courts, 30 recreation centers, 16 outdoor pools, 16 indoor pools, 8 golf courses, and as I mentioned, 2 herd of bison. It is a huge system. Partridge and a pear tree. It is a huge system, and it takes a lot of people doing jobs all up and down all that, including caretakers for our bison, because it turns out they have to eat every single day, and we just have to keep feeding them to make that system work. And we just have an amazing team at Parks and Recreation who deliver that system looking like it looks for the seamless experience for all of our residents in the city and in the mountain and all across all of our recreation assets every single day. Here, this is probably a little small slide for you to see from there, but we'll talk a little bit more about usage numbers specifically on another slide. We're tracking to have even higher usage numbers in 24. You see some 23 ones here, but big picture in 2023, over 16 million park visits, over 2.3 million recreation visits. And on the recreation side, I really want to highlight our My Denver program, which offers free access for youth all across our city, not just access to a building, which sometimes is the most important thing, to some place to go after school, but also a ton of programs that are dedicated just to our youth that they can get access to all of that through our My Denver program. We had around 415,000 My Denver uses in 2023. And we also have My Denver Prime, which gives adults 60 and over also free access to our parks. And we logged over 366,000 Prime uses. So on both ends of that spectrum, we are opening our doors wide at no charge and providing critical services in our city each and every day. Also want to highlight outside the recreation space where we fit into our admin space, you'll see our org chart in just a second, that we issued over 3,200 permits in 2023. We clocked over 15,000 volunteer hours, and we partnered with over 200 different nonprofit organizations and other groups to bring activity, to bring programming, to bring service, for people to celebrate weddings and anniversaries into our park system as well. All right, next up, I want to talk a little bit about, we've got over here, kind of on the right-hand side, our guiding principles. Those are from the Game Plan for a Healthy City, which is our guiding document at Parks and Recreation, and that covers kind of our adapt, connect, diversify, reinvest, and grow pillars that we've built on, and that Councilman Watson was one of the co-chairs of our game plan, I believe, when we did that. But wanted to pull out a couple pieces of the mission for DPR and what we're really focusing on. We want to expand our parks and recreation assets to meet this growing, thriving community in Denver and ensure equal access to high-quality parks and green spaces within a safe, walk-in rolling distance for every single resident across our city. And we strive every day to make strides to close the gap of what we have left to deliver for, so that every resident gets that. We also are working to create and grow parks and recreation services that target youth. You heard a little bit about our My Denver program, but we do a lot in that space for youth, both right after school with our Night Moves program in the evenings to provide safe space in evenings on the weekends. And so really focusing on what are we doing for our youth, especially through our recreation centers and then outdoor recreation programming. And then we really are working to adapt and prepare all of our spaces in our city for a changing climate. And so we are working to, on landscape transformations, which I'll talk about a little bit as we go out throughout today, where we're restoring and converting from Kentucky bluegrass into Colorado scapes that are teeming with pollinators all over the place. We're reducing our water usage. And working to create spaces that are resilient in a changing climate and also provide respite for humans as our city gets hotter, having spaces to go that are cool, that are engaging, and that they have access to as residents of our city. This next slide, just wanted to, I've got two different things happening. This slide here, I wanted to thank all of you on City Council for sharing with us your priorities. That really does help shape our work, our budget, and our work plan as we head into 2025. I'm not going to go through every single one of these and hit on everything that we're doing. You heard how big our system is, but just wanted to highlight a few things. We have rangers, our park rangers. We're not just out there making sure that people are following the rules and keeping their dog on leash around the playground so that we don't have dogs and kids having interactions that they shouldn't be. But they're also going through trauma-informed training so that they can have an informed response to people who are in crisis. We had a reporter come out to do a day in the life of one of our park rangers and was just kind of following along, and our park ranger found a person who was in crisis. Our park ranger was trained in administering Narcan, administered that, and saved that person's life while the reporter was just out trying to do a walkabout, like, hey, what are you going to do with our off-leash dogs? What are we doing as park rangers kind of thing? So it really is so much more than that, and supporting these priorities that you all have set through. I talked a little bit about our landscape conservation projects, reduce water and restore to that Colorado scape. We're going to be launching very soon landscape transformation right here at the City and County building with the non-functional turf around the building to really showcase what our Colorado scape and it's in Denver's nature campaigns are all about as we continue to roll that out across the city, but here as a touchstone to show that right here at City Hall. And then again, our programming for our active older adults through the My Denver Prime and our youth through our My Denver programming. Here is a little bit of our, the top level of our org chart. We're kind of broadly broken up into here parks and recreation. So those are two of our big things, with recreation also being our golf program. We also have our planning, design, and construction side of the house, which a lot of you often interact most with because we're doing all the plans for new stuff in the parks, replacing stuff in the parks, all the design and construction side that we handle outside of what Dottie handles. And then we have the administrative side of our thing, of our org chart, which includes all of those permitting and the other support pieces for our organization. I talked briefly about our numbers for 2023, but I think this is an important slide because it kind of shows our numbers over time. A couple things that I want to highlight on here is on the recreation side of things, we had a full stop, full closure during COVID for a while. We have not only recovered from that, but we are tracking to have even more people in our buildings since that full stop during COVID than we've ever had before. And on the park side of things, you probably heard in the news a lot during COVID, hey, people have to social distance, and so they're staying away from these places, but they're flooding our parks. Our parks saw usage like we had never, ever seen before. And we kind of anticipated that was going to be a peak. We were going to head in opposite directions. Our recreation was going to have a valley, and our parks was going to have a peak. Our recreation bounced back and is heading up. But on the park side of things, we've never really seen that go back down. People got out. They reestablished that connection to our parks and our open space, and they have never gone back from that. And so even though we're past the COVID restrictions, we have only seen upward trajectory and staying at those COVID levels and building on that to see more people in our parks than we have ever seen before as well. A couple of the, we track lots of different metrics, but wanted to highlight a couple of them that I've talked a little bit about. One is our 10-minute walk or roll to a high-quality park, which is critical for us as we continue to try to deliver that for every resident. I will tell you, it's an interesting metric because as, you know, we get more dense and we're measuring the number of people, that can dip as different park assets come into our system from private development that are maybe held by the developer, but they become ours. So it does kind of take a ride that does not always tell the story of how we're making progress. But you'll see we've got this where we are, despite that dip that was more about what was coming in when, we are making progress in this space as we continue to work towards that. The other thing that I'll highlight is you'll sometimes see different numbers on this. So somebody will be like, wait a second, that's not the number that I saw. The Trust for Public Lands has an entire process, a very lengthy process, where we have to go in and tell them all about our entire system, and they have their own scoring metrics for how many of each asset they think we should have that gets our park score, which we have been consistently climbing, especially since the passage in 2018 of the Park Legacy Fund. We've been consistently climbing up that ladder on our park score. They also have a 10-minute walk roll gap. They look at the map a little bit differently than we do. And so you might see a slightly different number than us in that they count all of the Denver Public School playgrounds and assets as an open space that people can walk to. And that is definitely the case. There are, for lots of people, there is a playground a block away from them that they have access to, and that's why that's an important part of that national component. What we do as DPR, though, is we are a little bit harder on ourselves. We don't let ourselves count all of those DPS assets because they're not something that we have 100% control over. And there have been cases where DPS has decided to shutter something, sell something, go in a different direction, or have had to lock a gate that used to be unlocked. And so our numbers are really about what are we providing as a city, but that is also important part of the metric when you see that with the Trust for Public Lands. So just wanted to highlight that you might see those numbers coming in a couple different ways. When it comes to equity, everything that we do through an equity lens. We were in front of City Council a couple months ago talking about our map, which is really what I'd like to focus on here, because I'm very proud of the work that the department has done in this space, and not just using the great work that has created the map that you will see used across the city in all kinds of decision making, but we've worked really hard to not only layer in parks metrics, but also to find out which of those parks metrics and what of these equity things are measuring the same thing to really get to a granularity where we can see when we make investments in an area that is changing. And that might not mean that neighborhood has come out of the inverted L or out of an equity area for a lot of other city reasons, but specifically from a parks standpoint, we've been able to make big investments in capital in specific neighborhoods that were the area of greatest need and actually see them move from that darkest green into a slightly lighter shade of green by having that targeted approach and really looking, deep diving on the metrics that overlay those citywide equity concerns, but then specifically with what are we doing from an investment standpoint. How are we closing that gap in those areas? And as you saw in our presentation when we came, we have really aggressively been investing our dollars in those areas of highest need for many years now. So very proud of that work. Here's a general breakdown of kind of the big budgets of our budget. Couple things that I will point out is you'll see our Parks Legacy Fund, which was the ballot initiative in 2018 that created a new dedicated funding source for parks and recreation. That is 100% sales tax. So as you've seen the presentations on what is happening with sales tax numbers, our legacy fund is 100% sales tax and is hit by all of those factors, whereas our general fund allocation falls roughly the same. I start to look at Nicole and Stephanie, and I'm like, here I'm going to talk about general fund and percentages of. I must kind of stop there because you've already heard that from smarter people than me. But our general fund, it has that traditional split that you see in the city that also is hit by sales tax. But our legacy fund is 100% sales tax. We also have a very large special revenue fund in our golf program, where the golf money that is generated by golf stays in golf and is in that special fund. So a couple of things I wanted to highlight there. Also, just big breakdown on kind of, you can see that we're very people heavy. Again, it takes a lot of folks to do all of the things all up and down our entire system that I talked about earlier. And so very, very heavy on people, and they really are the magic that makes everything work with Parks and Recreation. This is our slide that talks a little bit about where we've been and where we're going to be. So I think you've probably seen several of these already today, but you'll see our expenditures, the revenue that we bring in from the various sources where you know, our parks and recreation system generate revenue. Also our FTEs, which you'll see as going down a little bit. Our on-call budgets, we are also one of the biggest, if not the biggest, on-call staffing level in the city. We rely very heavily on seasonal staff who come on during the busiest seasons for us, for our outdoor pools, for when we turn on all the sprinkler systems and everybody really gets out during the summer season. So we're very dependent on our on-call staff in addition to our FTE staff. So you'll see some of the trends there. Some of our strategies for minimizing in this tough budget year is to, yeah, and you'll see this, I'll get in more detail, but really realigning and looking where are there positions that we can be paying for out of our special revenue funds. I touched on our bigger ones there, but we have several of them. We have a forestry special revenue fund. We have a mountain park special revenue fund. So we have several special revenue funds based on different sources. And so where appropriate, where that fund could handle that, could we move positions into that, taking that burden off of the general fund as we're seeing softening sales tax numbers. We had an expired lease in our services and supplies that ran out. And then also utilizing our dedicated funds, as you've seen, to continue working on our capital improvement program, even in a tighter budget year. So this is the nuts and bolts here, and we've kind of consolidated this on one slide so that you can see these changes, and we'll get into a couple others that live a little bit outside of that, but I'm gonna go through these one at a time. So you'll see an increase of $350,000 on our water and sewer bill. We did get water is very hard to predict for our system because we do a lot of irrigation. We're Denver Water's largest water user. That's why we're focused on these landscape transformations, because we have the biggest opportunity of anyone on Denver Water's system to reduce water usage. So when we do things, it has a very real impact. Our water bill goes up and down, and in a year that's a drought and a year where we get a ton of rain, those actually look more similar to us than a year that it's just, if there's a normal year anymore, a normal year. Because in a year where we get a lot of rain, we don't have to run the sprinklers as much because the grass is getting that, all the plants are getting that, the trees are getting that. In a drought year, we're on watering restrictions, so we actually use less water then too. So both of those sides of it are smaller for us in an average year, which is, we generally go into the year thinking this is going to be an average year. That's when we use the most water. We also had some changes to how our wastewater billing was done based on parcels that forced that bill to predictably be going up. And so you'll see an increase there. We also have our FTEs on, the next one is for our bond project at the Swansea Pool, where we will be staffing up for that pool to open. It won't be open for the full year, so this is staffing based on our anticipation of when it could open, staffing up, training, and getting that pool open, the staff, so that we don't have a pool completed and not the staff to open it. We're also holding, so that's on the kind of going up in our budget part. Then you'll see the ones that are going down. We are holding an FTE that we had that was dedicated to Civic Center that hadn't been filled, and so we'll continue to hold that for the entire year. There we also have, we're moving some expenses that currently sit in our general fund allocation but are eligible to be paid for out of some of our capital stack and our capital funding sources into capital to free up another $250,000. I mentioned the lease that we had ending in 2023 that by finishing that payment, we can free up $100,000. And then you'll see the shifting of FTEs to appropriate special revenue funds there for the $346,000. This is our other big one, and you have already seen this as one of the ways that we met the budget needs in 2024 as we went through it. But this is a change in the cost allocation plan from our golf special revenue fund. So, and this is where if I throw something, if I say this wrong, but every special revenue fund throughout the city does pay the city for shared services that are provided by the city for every enterprise fund pays for those things, and the calculation of that is complicated, but we re-looked at that calculation and were able to justify moving us, basically the enterprise fund, paying more for those services within that appropriate level of calculation that then relieves general fund need out of the special revenue fund. You also, this is one of my favorite items that you'll see us often have on our slides for Parks and Recreation, where we provide a lot of different programs. We provide, you know, free walk into a park and have a picnic access, all the way up to, you know, you pay for a round of golf that is for you. And so we look at what we do and look at things that have the most community benefit up to the most individual benefit, because we have things that fit everywhere in that pyramid in what we're providing. And as we looked at, you know, a tightening budget year and the need to do that, this was also an area that is mostly individual benefit. Whereas when we look at My Denver Programming for Youth, when we look at programming for My Denver Prime and our active older adults, or being able to pick up trash in a park so people can go and have a picnic for the holidays, you know, there are community benefits. And so we really tried to focus in on areas that have that individual benefit that are also fee-based. And so there is an opportunity to look at how our fees continue to make that a viable enterprise. And this was a place where we were able to find savings that benefit the general fund. Quick look back at 2024 and the TRUA budget amendment that happened, that was kind of spread across the city after 2024, you know, at the very end of the 2024 budget process. And some of the things that came out to the $436,000 from our supplies and services was the DPR portion of that. And we, because of that, we had to make cuts to our security camera repairs and upgrades. Our median maintenance contract, we manage not just all of our parks, our historic parkways, but a whole bunch of medians that we have contracted out to make sure that they get, as many of you often email me about, not every median in the city. Some of them have creative other places that are maintaining them, but quite a few. And so that's our contract for maintenance there. Our janitorial services and the recreation centers, we had to reduce, as well as our portalette contract that fall into there. As a result of that. ARPA updates, as you can see, DPR is very close to fully obligating all of our ARPA dollars that were allocated. I'd just like to point out here that DOF is repurposing $217 from one of ours. You are welcome to whoever's getting those $217 from that, but we are working to close out and spend down our ARPA dollars in these three areas.
To make a request from District 6.
The councilman from District 6 is in need of those dollars. These slides, you'll see these projects specifically called out in your budget book. I will say that these are not the only projects that we are working on. Our capital expenditures are very complicated and over multiple years. What I like to say all the time to tell people just have what they expect is we still have money in an account that has to be in that account. We can't start a construction project until we have all of the money for it. So it's not saying, hey, yeah, no, we'll get that money, so go ahead and start construction. We have to get it all together. That construction may take a year, it may take two, and then we don't do final sign-off for all of those funds to leave our bank account until we've had final sign-off with the contractors on that. Paco Sanchez Park, which has been open to the public for many years, we still are holding dollars on that because there are some punch list items that contractor owes us, so those dollars are still sitting there. You won't see that called out in here because that was from a different budget year. So those are just some of the projects that money is moving to a particular point to get us ready where we have all that money so that we can start either design or construction specifically on those projects. On the bond part of it, because again, we have our capital dollars that we use from the Park Legacy Fund, we have capital dollars in some of our other sources of revenue, but we also are managing a whole bunch of bond projects, which are often the projects that you all reach out to us. So we have 22 projects from our bond in design and development, 25 that are under construction, and 41 of those projects that are complete. And just because you don't see that called out in the same way in the budget book, those projects are all continuing to move forward. And with that, I think I got through everything. I was told to make sure to leave plenty of time for questions. And I know some of you pretty well, so I know you're going to have questions for me. But Mayor, is there anything you would like to add at this point before we open this up to questions?
Well done. Nothing more to add. Excited for questions. Yeah. Councilman Flynn, I wonder if you could just do that one more time real fast because he missed a couple
things.
I was going to say, are you showing favoritism? You didn't clap for everyone. For Denver Parks and Rec and Mountain Parks. I'm sorry, we didn't say the whole list. Thank you, Executive Director Clark. We have several folks in the queue, and it starts with Councilmember Hines, Councilmember Alvidres, and Councilmember Perry.
Thank you, Committee Chair. Former Councilmember Clark, you might remember that I, in budget meetings, I would say to all of the agencies, you are my favorite agency. So you're my favorite agency. Question for you. Did you go to both the dark side, or are we the dark side?
I was told I can't answer any questions right off the bat. I have to wait till they're all asked.
Good rules.
So the questions are, has Park studied the impact of reclaimed water on trees and grass? I've heard that in Cheeseman Park, the use of reclaimed water has started to kill some of the trees. So just put that out there. Also, turf conversion. Cheeseman Park would love to be part of that turf conversion. And the mayor talked about electrifying vehicles when an electric version exists. Will you talk about the electrification of particular like two-stroke vehicles or two-stroke items? And why doesn't Parks follow our lawn watering laws? Thank you, Committee Chair.
Thank you, Councilmember Hines. I can see Clark and many others are writing these down. So, Councilmember Alvidres.
Great, thank you. One of my questions, which we've been briefed on but still confusion about, is how can we get recycling in the park? I think we keep going to the park and keep seeing bags and bags of recycled things that are going to get thrown in the trash. The other question is, when it comes to golf, shout out to Pam who showed me some of the great things that you have at golf right now. One of the questions is how I saw the golf budget did go up, but that's just because it's a special fund, right? Okay. What we're curious about is there ways that we can reduce the water usage of golf in particular? Is there some spaces within the course where we could put in turf? Are we thinking about the water usage at all? I didn't see a return of the food truck program and would love to see. I think that could be a revenue generator. So I think that was really great. And I was hoping it would come to District 7, but it didn't quite. So that's about it. Thank you, Committee Chair.
Thank you, Council Member Alvidres. Councilwoman Parody.
I really get to ask all my questions. Okay.
Just two.
No, just two. All right, fine. So you know what one of the things I'm going to ask is, does the budget reflect some of the things you learned on your lawnmower and electrification infrastructure escapade of last month? And then I think the other thing I want to lift up is what investments in the parks and recreation workforce are you planning to make to try to retain people at those like low-income entry-level positions, which you guys have more of than some other agencies, and I know they can be hard to hire for, including how are you thinking about youth employment in 2025? Oh, I was so excited to ask all my questions. I'll email the rest.
You'll be back in the queue. You'll be back.
I will.
I'll add you. Councilmember Flynn and Council.
Thank you.
Member Torres.
Jolan, thank you for the presentation. You may recall that we had a particularly brutal homicide at the Southwest Rec Center about 2 years ago, and it did not have security cameras. And I saw on slide 17 that security camera repairs and upgrades were part of the reductions for the TRUA amendment. Are we able to maintain, have we installed security cameras in all rec centers? And are we able to reclaim any of that that funding for security camera coverage, repairs, and maintenance at our rec centers?
Were those your questions, or do you have another one?
I have just one more.
Okay.
Go for it. Just about the security cameras.
Yep.
Okay. From the Parks Legacy Fund, is there capacity in there for a little pocket park at the highest natural point in the city in my district?
He's got a few bucks left. You know what? I'm Executive Director Clark, because I know you, I'm going to pause here and have you kind of bucket those that you just that were just asked. You had four council members that asked. I think if I wait till the end, we're going to miss some stuff. So, and we have time. Okay. And so why don't we go back through at least from the questions from the first four council members, and then we'll go to council member Torres after you at least provide a few responses from these council members.
Okay, so on the, I think there were several in the water space. So I'll say on watering rules, we do always try to follow the watering rules as much as we can. The truth of the matter is when you have a system, wash park, for instance, we had a pump go down, and so I got to really know that system. We have over 700 zones, not 700 sprinkler heads, 700 zones, and the pumps can only run a certain number of them. So when one pump went down, the whole system could only run, I think, like 10 zones at a time. And so to keep the trees from dying, to keep things from dying, you have to be on a different watering schedule than if you're, you know, a residential user. So we do our best during drought years, work with Denver Water to maximize following that within the confines of the system that we have. Also on the irrigation systems, when it comes to golf, we have some of the most sophisticated irrigation systems, and we'll continue to look at where are there places, you know, as part of our turf conversion, and as you mentioned on that, everywhere. But we have systems where literally, I've walked around with them, they have an iPad, and there, unlike at Wash Park where we have zones, each sprinkler head can be turned on and off, it can be pointed only in certain directions, and it can only be run when that needs it. And there's been huge water savings on our golf, and they've been really focused on bringing all of those systems up to a very high standard. I mean, when you go into our maintenance shops, they have some of the most high-tech, I mean, like two screens, maybe not quite this size, that show every single sprinkler head. They can turn one on, one off, they can only water where it needs to be. And so definitely something that we also think about on the golf side of things. Obviously, that golf and the turf that we have there, it is a different environment than at other places, but absolutely something that we continue to look at there. And then to Councilman Hines' question about watering with the purple pipe recycled water, we continue to work with Denver Water. Happy to, I can't get too deep into that, you know, in this forum, but happy to chat with you specifically about Cheeseman Park. So one, monitor the soil, two, monitor the trees, work with Denver Water on the composition, the phosphate levels in that water, and then also we do bring in trucks to do flushes when we're watching, and we think that that is something that's needed as well. So we continue to work with that balance on what is a, you know, a newer water system, and things have gotten dramatically better from when it first rolled out, and we did see you know, some of the areas at Wash Park and Cheeseman really struggle, and we're continuing to, not to say that we can't continue to make more improvements, but that is getting much better as we learn more and work closely with Denver Water on that. Staying in the sustainability space, you know, we are continuing to look at how do we bring recycling and even compost across our system, right? We have not just in our parks, but in all the facilities that we have, making sure that those are possible. We did pilot recycling in several parks, and unfortunately it was not successful. We ended up with so many people ignoring, even though so it was giant purple dumpster, you know, they would throw everything and anything in there, and it got to the point where our hauler said they won't accept this anymore. So you can keep telling people you're recycling, you can keep using a purple dumpster instead of a green one, but this is all going to the landfill. And so we also don't want to be misleading people. For somebody like me, I'm going to pack my aluminum and take it home if I know it's going to the landfill. So we need to find ways to partner, and I know both of you have talked about ways to partner on better messaging and education. I think, you know, as we continue to explore Waste No More, there will be, as a city, I think we're going to get more sophisticated in that, and we will continue working on that. But I think we're going to roll back, unfortunately, from those wide open spaces that people can throw anything, sometimes 24 hours a day in, where we have very little eyes on it, to rolling out more successful programs in our recreation centers where we have eyes on that, where we can manage that flow better, really learned what we can be about being successful in those areas where there just is less opportunity for illegal dumping, for people to put the wrong stuff in there. And so then you've got park users who are feeling good about what they're doing and throwing their aluminum in a purple bin, and we have to end up taking it to the landfill anyway. So some of the challenges that we're facing. Also in that sustainability front, definitely electrification. As I was in front of you recently talking a lot about, we are full speed ahead on our full assessment of our maintenance shops, all of our facilities where we would plug this equipment in. In addition to that, I got out recently with some of our vendors and was able to drive some equipment around, see what's available. And so we are continuing to move on both of those fronts. What can we bring into the system with every single purchase? As we're making that purchase, is it possible, is it feasible, can we charge it, and how are we going to have that plan for what needs to be done? And I think that will dovetail in also with the citywide work that's happening around climate change in the coming year. I think those were some of the big
another one was investments in workforce and youth employment. Councilmember Perry.
As you said, we are, if not the largest, then we're very near the top in terms of employment of youth. And that is something that is core to the fiber of who our team is. I can't tell you how many recreation centers I've walked into, and as I'm meeting everybody, ask them, well, when did you start with the department? And they say, when I was 15. And, you know, including this gentleman over here, who I think started when he was maybe 12, they put him to work. And so we continue to work on that. I will say that with that, we continue to struggle with that. It's been a great thing to see wages continue to go up, but as the minimum wage gets higher and higher, youth employment gets harder for us. Employment across the board, you know, that eats up more of our on-call budget, because then we have compression on top of that, where we're trying to make sure that if you're coming back for a second season or a third season, you're making more, but that continues to eat into all those budgets. And we also want to make sure that we have enough staff to keep all the doors open, to provide all the opportunities. But that's something that we are deeply invested in continuing to work at, and we partner with all kinds of folks also to do Green Corps, program where we are hiring to partner with nonprofits that bring youth corps in to do work on our trees. And so we are, I think that's a core piece of what we do, and we continue to work on.
We had a little bit on the security cameras, the discussion from Councilmember Flynn, and then of course food trucks, and then we'll transition to next three questions.
I'll get back to you on the full plan on where all we have cameras. We continue to not only put cameras in, but also we have some mobile ones that we moved to hotspots. We have a ton of problems around restrooms. We have had two in the last 3 weeks that were broken into at night when they're locked, not even during the day, and one was a near total loss of the building because it was lit on fire, and the other one, every single fixture inside was crushed to the porcelain things were crushed to bits and pieces, the metal was bashed up, and it's basically a total loss of the fixtures inside. So we continue to try to find that right balance, and especially making investments in areas where there's crime or violent crime that can assist in keeping those places safer. So, but I can get you the full list of where we've been able to roll that out.
And then the food trucks, and then we'll move to Councilmember Torres.
So we're just wrapping up our food truck pilot, I will have a report on what worked and what didn't work and where we're going from there, but we're just getting to the end of it and getting feedback from our vendors so that we can see what worked, what didn't work, and where do we go from here on that.
Thank you, Executive Director Clark. We have President Pro Tem Romero Campbell, Councilmember Gilmore, and Councilmember Cashman.
After me.
Yeah. Of course. Sorry, I just jumped you.
I know. No, I'll put you.
Once you're no longer Council President.
Council Member Torres.
Thank you so much. So I'll start with just a highlight and thanks of a really bright piece, I think, this year. And one of our constituents alerted us to a piece of land on Lakewood Gulch in the Villa Park neighborhood that presents itself like a vacant lot, but it's actually park land, an extension of the gulch. And when we talked, you agreed really quickly to release an RFP for a nonprofit to convert that vacant parcel, vacant piece of land, into a community garden. They got the grant funding to implement that. You approved that RFP. It is moving forward, and I just want to thank you for that. The question around that is that RFP enough to be a universal RFP for any citywide parcel that can convert to a community garden or urban garden space, or does it have to be parcel by parcel for nonprofits to respond, or can you do that again? The other has to do with, my other question is more around the PNI efforts and investments. So in District 3, Llama Park, Paco Sanchez Park, Barnum Park have been heavy draws on resources for Parks and Recreation, in not just staff, but also in fencing, in security measures. So wondering if there is a count of the budget impact to responding to those parks for those particular needs. Impact of fencing off parks. I've got two parks with a big majority of the access points fenced off right now. And so what becomes the operations process, Mayor, this may be for you around PNI, or condition to opening them back up. Obviously, Llama is not a PNI, but it basically could be because populations are just moving fluidly between Paco and back to Llama. So that is kind of one line of questioning. The other has to do with the 10-minute walk roll distance. So the equity map includes that. According to Trust for Public Land, apparently 93% of the city is now within that walk shed, that distance shed. So what does the new gap look like? Where is that? And does that need to change what your equity map looks like? Kind of feeds into this. There's a lot of factors in your equity map, not just the 10-minute distance to a park, but other things that we've talked about in terms of basically a poverty index for the city. And if we are nearing 100%, amazing, congratulations. I can't believe it's even 93%. How are we shifting the next kind of iteration? Is it toward improving existing amenities? Is it to replacing old playgrounds? Like, what it then becomes kind of our new goal? So those are my questions.
Thank you so much, Member Torres. President Pro Tem, Romero Campbell.
Thank you, and thank you for the presentation. I have a lot of questions. My first one is, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, I've asked about the sidewalk, our new sidewalk fees that are gonna be coming up. My understanding is that city properties would be also part of that. Do you have an idea as to what that cost will be for Parks and Rec, and where is it reflected here in the budget? And then my second one, thank you, I wrote it down. And then my second one is related to golf. And so I see on page, move it down. I see on page 584 that there was a net increase in revenue. And where does that go? I know you had talked about a portion of that would be in adjustments. I don't remember what slide that was. But is that being held for improvements at the golf courses or what? And then I also see in another line item on page 586, or no, I'll come back to it. But I also see that there are some reductions to golf staff and FTE. So just trying to get an idea as to kind of what that plan is moving forward for golf, specifically Kennedy. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, President Pro Tem, and then Councilmember Gilmore.
Chair, thank you for the partnership and work in District 11, Director Clark. I'll look down to two questions here. Similar line of questioning to Pro Tem on page 590, the golf expenditures increased by 19.28%, and it looks like there's a pretty big jump. And so I'd like to know overarchingly, why is golf operations expenditures increasing more than nearly every other expenditure in Denver Parks and Rec? Is it a function of, well, I'll just let you answer that question. And then my second question is, it was great to see the slide around equity and the upcoming park, or the upcoming pool, excuse me, but we have been waiting for an additional 2 years for the Green Valley Ranch indoor swimming pool, which was part of the 2017 bond package. It's had a 2-year delay, and so asked Amy Ford earlier on the opening, and she kicked to you that you're going to have to hire the lifeguards and the pool staff, etc. And so when will that pool be open, Director Clark?
Is that a good council member? Gilmore? So we'll stop with those three because that's some meaty stuff. And Executive Director, you can call a friend. So if you need support from your large team and or from finance, please do so. But I'll have you jump in and then we'll see if you need support from others.
Okay. I'm not going to get into the details of that specific RFP for that because I'll dig that up and we'll do a more specific, but what I will say on our RFPs on the gardening and food production is we have been moving to a new process to put an RFP out in general for certain things, whether that is, you know, youth workforce or, you know, food production, where there are lots of partners that do that, and we want to be ready and able to be able to take advantage when there are parcels identified with community. And so how exactly that fits into the work that we're doing with that one in particular, I won't answer right now, but yes, we are looking to try to make those things easier through some bigger RFPs that aren't always tied to just one project, as we learn from that and want to be able to be responsive to the community, especially when we find space that is underutilized. I don't know that we have our P&I budget completely pulled out for what we're spending there, because a lot of times it's, you know, fencing that we already own, and so there isn't necessarily a rental cost to it, but it's moving there an opportunity cost of where else it could be used, or we're repurposing staff time. But we'll do our best to kind of dig a little bit more into what the you know, what some of those things are cost. What I will tell you, when it comes to P&I sites or other sites that are for whatever reason having to you know, be closed off for a time, is we are working to stand up a new committee that is cross-departmental, interagency, that will have all different folks who will look at these areas, similar to how P&I is looking at those specific areas with all of those lenses about how do we work together to reduce crime, to solve this problem. We're going to look at that across the board anytime a fence has to go up anywhere in a park for whatever reason that limits you know, access in there, to talk about, you know, how are we getting on a path to reopening that, but also not just reopening that in a way where the problem continues and persists. And so that's a little new for us, and we're just standing that up to really dive in with all the partners, because while yes, it is in a park, it really is an issue that requires you know, assistance for us from all across the city. And so stay tuned for some updates on how we are working towards, you know, going into some of that stuff with already a group working on the plan to tackle that problem in a way that we bring those fences down as quick as possible.
Sidewalk fees.
We got that one.
You got that one?
Yeah.
All right. We'll take a drink while you do
that. So that is something that the Department of Finance has budgeted.
Justin, do you mind introducing yourself just so the folks
sure.
Watching?
Justin Sykes, Budget and Management Director in the Department of Finance. For the sidewalks fee, that is something that we project will cost about $2.1 $1 million for city general fund agencies next year. You can find that in the budget on page 384. There is a section for special payments where you'll see that $2.1 million is budgeted, and then there's a slightly more detailed explanation on page 388.
All right, what a 10-minute walk gap. I will say that while we continue to get closer, and again, you'll see a couple different metrics on that, the last piece of that is very hard. There are communities where, you know, there isn't just a parcel sitting there that's for sale to move. And so we still do have a lot of work, and we want to stay laser focused on delivering that while also continuing to bring the level of all of the parks up to the to that high quality park level, so that it's not just that you have a park that you can get to in that 10-minute walk roll, but it is a high level park that has the amenities that that community wants and needs. And so we have yes, on paper you look at that and go, oh my gosh, we're getting close. I would say we have a lot more to do in that space before we would pivot to kind of a new strategy, and this will be the hardest part. Right. There are reasons why those gaps have been there and have been there for decades. They're the most important gaps for us to fix because they have been there for decades, but they're also the hardest ones with just a ton of moving pieces to try to fix. So we continue to be hyper-focused on making incremental change in that as the city also continues to grow, right? And making sure that areas that are growing are also adequately parked for the kind of density that they're experiencing, which was maybe not the density when the park was originally planned. On golf, a couple things that I'll just say on the golf portion of things, because golf is in an enterprise fund, the money that is generated for golf stays with golf. So to the question of, is this being set aside for improvements? Yes, the golf money stays in golf, other than the cost allocation, which is the enterprise fund paying for services that are being provided by the city, whether they be legal or finance or other things that I won't list in totality because I'll get them wrong, that are paid for out of that. And there are some provisions where if there is a big project where a certain portion can move the other way from the parks budget into support a big project in there, but that is capped even on how much money can come into the fund outside of fees. So it really is its own little backyard, right, that lives inside that. So when they generate more revenue, then they have more revenue to expend or to put towards our savings account that they're saving to do big capital projects. And when, you know, they don't make as much money, then either you have to look at, are the fees appropriate to run that fund, or are there ways that the operation needs to be trimmed down to meet the budget? I there were some like specific call-outs of lines in there, so we will follow up with answers to exactly in there, but I think generally that hit a lot of the different questions that I heard around golf coming in. And then
the GVR piece, speaking on pool, can you provide a little bit more direction on that?
Yeah, and again, thank you for the question. There is nobody other than you who wants that pool open more than we do, and our team, we are ready. As soon as the keys are passed over from construction, which we are finally getting close to, we've talked with you, with Dottie, about some of the hurdles that happened that led to that 2-year delay, but we are ready, and we will have that thing as soon as, I can't give you an exact date yet, because we don't know, you know, when they're gonna pass the keys off and pass that final inspection. As soon as they do, we are ready. We will have, training to do, we'll have water, a lot of water to get the chemicals right on and get it so that we can get it open, but you will be the first person to know when we have an official opening date for that, and we are, fingers crossed, that we are getting very close to being able to tell you when that date is.
Councilmember Gilmore, follow up.
Are you hiring for the positions for the pool?
Yeah, we have the budget, but we are not hiring until we have the construction pulled over, because we have done that on other projects, and then we don't have any project for them to do. So as soon as we either get that exact date that they'll be passed off, then we'll start the hiring.
Thank you so much, Executive Director. And Justin and Stephanie, every time there's a sidewalk question, I always want to make sure we elevate all of the exceptions. We specifically spoke to parks, but is there an exception to the sidewalk fee? I think every time we say that, it's important for us to say that in totality, because we're going to get calls and questions on it. So does anyone want to elaborate as it pertains to any other exceptions to the sidewalk fee? We spoke about Denver Parks and Recs. What other large agencies, if any?
I believe
believe only the airport is actually an exception to the sidewalk fee. Otherwise, the city's, all of our sidewalks, just like residents, are subject to the fee.
You see how I drew you right to that, to say den. So that was very helpful.
Sorry, if I can point out one more thing on the sidewalks, if I can.
Yeah.
One of the things that we worked on is we're a little bit different. Where the money's going in for that, right? We're not exempt from it. But our sidewalks don't always live in the right-of-way, like a lot of other places, because we've got all of Wash Park, and the right-of-way might only be the 5 feet here or 10 feet here. And we've got an existing path that's 15 feet, and that's where people want to walk. They don't want to walk right next to the traffic. They want to walk a little bit interior. So we worked with the committee that was working on changes to put forward slightly different rules in parks to make sure that we are still meeting the walkability and the need for that, but we're not going to end up laying down a whole bunch more concrete in green space that is literally 3 feet away from an existing concrete. We want to improve that from asphalt to a nice walk instead of having two parallel paths just because this one is in the right of way and this one is on park property. So that is one other way that we're a little bit different than a lot of other folks, because we have all of that space to really be smart about where those paths go, connecting people where they want to walk, so that we're also not, you know, creating this path over here and people are social trailing over here because they'd rather be a few more feet into the park walking through the trees instead of right next to the park.
Perfect. Thank you, Executive Director. We have four folks in the queue, about 30 minutes, so we're doing great on time. So Councilmember Cashman, Councilmember Sawyer, and Council President Sandoval.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's see. The Denver Parks and Rec in partnership with the Forestry Office just recently released the Urban Forest Strategic Plan. Wondering if there is an implementation schedule. I know one of the things it calls for is a long-awaited strengthening of our tree preservation ordinance. I'd like to know about that. I'd also, and get me this whenever, please, but how has the Parks General Fund allocation fared since the Parks Legacy Fund was established? Because that money is supposed to be on top of rather than replacing. And just one comment, as far as the recycling in the parks, I'd like to see a pilot in a park with volunteers helping people know where to put stuff. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Councilmember Cashman. Councilmember Sawyer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Okay, a couple of questions around same questions I asked Dottie, right? Number one thing that we hear in our office is about the time it takes to get projects done. So curious what you are doing internally within Parks and Rec to work on shortening the time frame of some of the project delivery items that are coming up. Number two, frontline staff and numbers, right? And this isn't just our park rangers, but also like our forestry staff and things like that that are necessary frontline workers. Some of them are revenue generating, some of them are not, but either way, the decision to hold on staffing those positions is going to have an impact on the quality of our parks and our trees. And when it comes to things like forestry, and we have giant trees that are dying and could fall over at any minute, that is a safety issue as well. And then I'm just curious why permitting looks like to me that it's down 20% when our numbers are showing on the screen that they're going, our usage numbers are going up. So why are we expecting our permitting numbers are going down when our usage numbers are going up? Thanks.
Thank you, Councilmember Sawyer. Council President Sandoval.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Director Clark. My questions are on our mountain parks. So I don't know any other cities that have mountain parks, like outside of what we have. I was up at, is it Echo Lake? And it's vacant right now. And so there's a couple nonprofits that take youth from like Northwest Denver, West Denver, to have an opportunity to go to the mountains. Urban Trek, I think it is, something like that. I'm wondering I know that we could, I know you're working for this, I just would like to see where the budget that is, because I think that that's such an important amenity for Denver, is our mountain parks. My other one was gonna, you already touched on it, but the sidewalks, like at Rocky Mountain Park, I don't need sidewalks everywhere. Like, I think you would agree, at Berkeley Park, I don't need sidewalks everywhere. My question is, though, is how do we work with golf with sidewalks at Willis Case? Because that's where I do need sidewalks. And so there are parks where I think where we could use that exception in the sidewalk ordinance to not get sidewalks along the right-of-way. But like on Tennyson, at Willis Case, I should have a sidewalk on both sides. On Sheridan, I should have 100% of a sidewalk, and on 52nd Avenue. So those would be my question. And then my third would be, how do we better coordinate with our ranger department? Like, our rangers are really great. Our rangers in Northwest Denver keep thinking that the people who go to the park to do on Sunday who have lowriders are supposed to have a park permit in like Berkeley Park. You're not, but you're gonna go and you're gonna chill and you're gonna talk to your friends and you're gonna make a hamburger and you're gonna go on. And so there's this weird disconnect between the permitting department in parks and the park rangers. Like they're not sharing each other's information, and they're saying that if 30 Latinos get together, they're supposed to have a park permit. Like, I'm not going to get a park permit. Like, half my family is 30 Latinos on a Saturday, and we all have lowriders, and we all happen to stop at Berkeley Park. I shouldn't be penalized because that's my culture. And cruising is a culture in Northwest Denver between Rocky Mountain Park, Berkeley Park, and La Raza Park. So I've had to put myself in the middle a couple times on a weekend, and it's not comfortable having to go out to the park on a Sunday and have to literally stand in the middle between our park rangers and a cultural event that's been happening in the north side my entire life, which I know you know because you grew up in Denver and you know that this is a cultural event. So just figuring out how we integrate those more together and not say, okay, just because you're 30 brown people standing in a park, it means you need a park permit. And maybe they do. I'm happy to enforce that too, but I just don't think that that's always the case. Quinceañera, a birthday party, yes, 100%. The afternoon and they all just happen to meet on the park, 100%, I don't think they do. So those are my, like, I know I look over, but these are like 2.5 questions to have commentary. Thank you.
Thank you, Council President. Executive Director, turn over to you.
Great, thanks. Urban Forestry Strategic Plan, that's hot off the presses. We'll be in front of City Council talking about that soon. And we are just transitioning from where do we want to be? What is the strategy into developing that implementation? So stay tuned on that as we continue to unravel that whole thing and now say, okay, this is not a plan that's just going to sit on a shelf like these books here. We are going to get to implementing it. And so we'll be working through that. But the first step was to set the vision, set the strategy of where do we want to be. Now the work is, how are we going to get there? And how are we going to get there quickly? So we'll be back in front of you with some of that. Also, just want to touch on, we can definitely get you some numbers, and thank you for asking the questions I always used to ask when I sat over there about how's the general fund faring with our new fund. But I will say what I've said before. I just am, having come from that side and been involved with that, and now being on the inside, I'm so proud of the team and how hard they've worked and how seriously they take, making sure that this is not being supplemented and just disappearing over the years. And, I found even sometimes I'll ask a question and they're the ones like, oh, we can't do that because that's coming out of legacy and that would be supplanting. And so I can get you the numbers on that, but I will just tell you that I feel very very impressed with what the team has done before I got here and continues to in establishing those rules that were written in by City Council when it was referred to the voters and making sure that we were honoring that. Especially, nobody could have predicted, I don't think, in 2018 that we would have had, as much budget turbulence as we've seen, because it's real easy to not supplant those funds in a great budget year. It gets harder when the budget gets tighter, and COVID alone could have taken a huge dent out of that, and it didn't. So on the time to get projects done,
I'll also say the same thing I said about the pool. There is nobody who wants to get these projects done quicker. So we work very closely, and we are continuing to work very closely with Dottie, who does a lot of the procurement and delivery, even on parks projects, is Dottie stuff, for us to better understand, you know, why are these things taking so long? How can we be better prepared and be doing better on our side to make sure that any part that we can control, we can speed up, and also moving, you know, I think if you look back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, there were planning efforts, and then that plan went and sat on a shelf and was like, okay, you know, what are we going to do? And now really looking at how do we kind of immediately be thinking about implementation as we're going through planning, because we know even those things take take a really long time on the construction side of things. So we're continuing to try to find improvements anywhere we can in that process to get projects done quicker. On your question about staffing frontline, so what we're doing is we're digging deep in to our, you know, vacancy numbers and coming up with a plan kind of division by division with an emphasis on making sure that frontline service delivery staff are prioritized, and where else can we hold something for a little while longer or maybe hold something for the whole year to make sure that we are prioritizing that and make that something that is as seamless and as unseen by our residents, by the public, as possible. And I think you've been digging into it to come up with that. But I feel very good about where we're headed on really not just saying, okay, we've got this, so it's an across the board, everything is the same, but really looking position by position, division by division, what impacts, and prioritizing the pieces that we need to have to not have those service gaps. And so again, you know, the proof will be in the pudding of what we're able to do, and I can't tell you that, you know, managing all of that, there won't be a trash can that won't be missed one day that you'll be calling me about and saying, hey, why didn't trash get picked up here? But I feel very confident going into the budget year knowing this, and with the levels that have been set around not just what is normally budgeted, but where there, when you have, you know, 2,500 employees, that churn level, there are a lot of ways to manage that, a lot of different ways, where some of the smaller agencies and departments don't have as much flexibility to manage that across all of their systems. And so I feel very confident that we're gonna deliver on this for you very well when it comes to frontline, those frontline folks and those critical needs. Permitting usage, I will have to dig into where those numbers are. We will get you last year, this year, and any discrepancies between them, but I immediately, that seems like there's just something missing there, but I don't want to dig too deep into it until I get all the information, so we'll get back to you on that one.
574.
Thank you. And then mountain parks, Echo Lake Lodge is just, again, one of these magical places that when you go up to, you're like, wait a second, this is the City and County of Denver Mountain Parks. It's so cool. Unfortunately, with Echo Lake, with Bahashka Teepee, these are historic assets that we have loved nearly to death. And prior to 2018 and Park Legacy, when Park Legacy, when I was working on that, wrote in kind of five core areas that Legacy was to fund, and specifically mountain parks, specifically forestry, were called out in addition to the other ones. I don't want to minimize those other ones, but because the questions are here, called out as areas that needed investment, because we had historic assets that were literally crumbling and getting to the point where you couldn't save them. We had leases in those buildings that we honored a full lease and all of the renewals on that lease, but as they've ended, we've taken a pause. We have septic systems that we need to reevaluate. We have to look structurally. So the first step of that is to do an assessment of the structure. Like, what needs to happen to make sure that this structure stands for the next 25 years, for the next 50 years, for the next 100 years, because we are not on a trajectory to save these buildings. First, we need to understand that. Then we need to do some visioning with community about who are the partners. We have an amazing partnership with the Denver Zoo, doing a ton of stuff in our mountain parks. And they're talking about bringing youth up there and doing education. And I think the sky's the limit on the possibility. First, we got to understand how bad has it gotten? What do we need to do to save the structure, make sure that it will be here for the next 100 years? Then we are going to do the visioning on what to put in there. And then we're going to do kind of build, not just to save it, but also to suit what
the community wants to see in those spaces. So would love anyone who you're thinking, when you're up there looking at those places and you're like, you know what would be really awesome, send that my way, because we'd love to plug into that. Something I'm very passionate about, those facilities and what we do. But again, you know, we had a lot of years of rough use and deferred maintenance, and so it's a hard stop. Nobody likes it to see empty. We're looking at how do we get temporary uses in there, how do we set stuff up in parking lots to keep it activated. But this pause, while painful, will serve the residents of Denver for the next 100 years in making sure that we have amazing assets.
I have one question on that. We all have council districts, and all districts outside our council districts. So how do we keep up with that? Because I don't, in all my years of being here, it's not a consistent briefing at Luby for Mountain Parks. It's like something you have to, I'm sure you saw the training when we were in District 7, something you have to claw at and like really get at. So can you and I get together and figure out a more systematic way to get this in front of all of the city council members? Because it's not one council member looking at it, and the at-largers can really be dealing with all the other city issues and like, our issues with the two at large, and that's a full deck. So can we get together offline and figure out like who could be like the owners of the park and get those briefings on those building assessments? Because we've done one in Berkeley. I know that building in and out now because of the building assessment that your staff briefed me on, right? But that's something you have to key into like Echo Lake Park.
Yeah, Thank you. I want to clarify on the sidewalk piece. We did not ask for exemptions from the rule. We asked for a bigger buffer. So the rule as written was the sidewalk had to be in the right-of-way. And we said, the park, there isn't right-of-way. It's all public space. So we have a bigger buffer, but we are still required to provide those sidewalks within that buffer. And so there won't be a place where it's just we're opting out of sidewalks as part of that. It's just that we have more flexibility to make that usable in that space and navigate, not repeat something that might already be there. So I just want to clarify that we're not walking away from with an exemption. It was just more flexibility that public right-of-way doesn't mean the same thing in a park as it does on a private property. We'd love to, I'll reach out to you and we'll dig a little deeper on the permits and rangers and anytime any of you have any stuff like that, please just reach out and we'll dig into it. So, I think I got everything.
Yeah, and Director Clark, I would say the Outdoor Adventure Strategic Plan also helps with activation of Echo Lake and all of our mountain parks as well. So I think having a deeper understanding that there's a strategic plan that passed, I think it was 2022, is helpful on top of the structural upgrades for each of those spaces within Echo Lake and other parks we have in the mountain parks. We have two other council members, about 15 minutes. Council Member Lewis and then Council Member Gonzalez Gutierrez.
Yep. Forgot we were here. Two questions for you. So does the proposed budget allow for construction of new interactive water features? You know where I'm going with this, Jolyn. In neighborhoods with no local access to cooling options in heat island hotspots. Got that one? Great. Second one is the 10-minute walk or roll. So I'm curious if you are coordinating with host on both congregate and non-congregate, tiny homes, housing developments of any sort. How are you all strategically planning to be able to make the 10-minute parks and even the urban gardens a reality as we're like looking at who the folks on unsheltered homes and to what are the options that we had available on the housing. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Council Member.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
My first question is about, and you and I have talked about this, about sports, youth sports specifically, and I do see the line items for youth programs. I don't know if that equates to the same thing, but just curious if there will be enough coaches, I guess, for the teams, because in the past, and especially right after coming out of COVID, there wasn't a lot of coaches, and so there wasn't weren't able to fill some of the teams at certain rec centers, and or parents are coaching, which is fine, right? If a parent wants to volunteer, and there's always an option to volunteer, but I do notice that there's just been a very low supply of coaches, and also coaches that are equipped with knowledge of the sport that they're coaching.
Oh, and my other question, sorry.
I was going to volunteer us to do it, but when you said parents were a little suspect.
I've already done my time. I did help coach soccer. And then my other question was, I was trying to look for where, so the Urban Farm, remember we went and checked that out. It is on parkland. It is on parkland. Is that anywhere in here in the budget? Like, is there anything that they get other than just the land, the Urban Farms?
And you can jump right on in.
That's it. Remember, the Dos is the last question before we go back into the queue. So.
Okay. Great. So to go back, I will get a list of any specific water features that are named, but I'll also tell you that we are working with CASR and looking internally when we look at climate resilience on, we just went through a bit of a rough patch because there was a lot of change in rules from both Denver Water and DDPHE when it came to water features. And so we've had to kind of relook at what we can build and the cost based on that and what options there are. But we're very excited to now have kind of figured that out, come up with our standards. And so I'll get back to you on kind of our pathway on that. But I know I've talked to a couple other council members about, as part of our resilience plan, how are we looking at where there are spots in our heat map in the city that not only from a park amenity standpoint, and this is fun, but there's a real need for cooling. And how can we step into that space under the new rules when it comes to water in our parks? And then great recommendation to coordinate with HOST. I'll make sure that we're looking, you know, not just at all of the data that comes in up and mapping on where folks are living, but that we're live updating that as we're bringing on more housing, and that's part of our 10-minute conversation. When it comes to Urban Farms, we have an agreement with them that was not up this year, so it hasn't changed. So I don't know off the top of my head what all is in that agreement, but I can look up the agreement and tell you what's in that. That was not one that changed this year. It wasn't up for, you know, kind of renegotiation. So they're plugging away on the agreement that is in there. And we did not remove anything from that or anything, but we also didn't add anything to it. It wasn't a year for negotiation on that one that I'm aware of. And then when it comes to coaches, definitely we love volunteers. I know I had a couple calls that came into me. We were like, kid didn't get into a team and really wants to play. And I talked to our rec team and they said, we don't have enough coaches. So I talked to the parent and I was like, you willing to coach? And we got all extra teams just put on because it was a coaching gap. But John, I don't know if you wanted to talk anything else about coaching recruitment or.
Good afternoon, everyone. John Martinez, I'm the Deputy of Recreation and Golf. Good afternoon, council members, mayor. We are working on a plan to get more coaches. Prior to COVID, we had no issue. So we lost some staffing, and obviously during the migrant crisis, we lost some staffing as well. And so Tony Hernandez, our youth sports director, is working on a volunteer program to not only have volunteer parents, but, you know, college students that want to come out and give back as community service. And then we are also looking at our youth employment to plug them in for coaching. And we do follow the National Alliance for Youth Sports, and that is about the quality of our program. So we are working on that plan to make sure that no kid is left off the team.
And I will say, even though they didn't keep score, I think Sheila, one of our star coaches this year, coached an awesome team in the rec
center. Get the cheer.
All hands on deck operation.
Kind of long, so I know you had a half question you wanted to finish, and then I'll ask a question, and then I'll go back into the queue. So your half question, Councilmember Lewis.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Do you all have plans to make it more clear, more streamlined for the permitting process, for community to be able to access that without needing council intervention to be able to do so?
We always strive to continue doing that. I know we've had a couple specifically that have come up, and I've been working with the team on, you know, all of our various rules, regulations, how do we continue. I will say there have been huge improvements over the years from where things were to people really understanding how the system worked, but always room for improvement. And we look at each case where it doesn't work as an opportunity to sit down and say, okay, what didn't work here, and what can we do to work on that?
Yeah,
what?
Just one.
Like a quarter.
Come on.
That's
it is.
Not a quarter.
It is, I promise. I'm just curious as to what you all have learned in recent times that you've implemented from the failures that you've seen
with the permitting process.
Let me work with my team, and we'll get you
some of those lessons learned.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Executive Director. I've got one quick question for myself, then I'll go back to the queue. I was looking in the budget book to see under the parks pool maintenance or pool updates. Didn't see Mestizo Curtis Park. Curious as to the funding for that upgrade and for that park. I see Swansea. I don't see Mestizo Curtis Park. Was that something that was left out, or is that a different cachet of listing of funding?
Yeah, the funding is there. I don't know, Gordon, if you wanted to speak to Curtis Park pool timeline, or we can follow up with you on the timeline for Curtis. So we'll get you the full timeline, but that project is continuing to move forward. Like I said, that was a confusing list because it's just specific moves in that budget year versus overall, and there's a whole capital stack for that one. Why don't we just get you the whole timeline on where we are and where we're headed on that one.
That's fine. I'll follow back up with Gordon on that. And one other question on maintenance on page 588. It appears to be, and I could be reading this incorrectly, I'm reading it on my phone, a reduction in park maintenance by nearly 4%. Is that correct? Are we listing, am I reading that incorrectly, that we've seen park maintenance reduction, page 588? So tell me if my lying eyes are telling me something incorrect.
I think you're correct. So,
I am correct.
Near the very top of the page, $265,000 reduction, or about 3.8.
Can someone explain the why for that? If not, then I'll wait for a response next Monday as we send in our questions.
We serve with you up here and make sure that we speak to that correctly.
All right. You've got 5 minutes. We have Councilmember Parody, and I think Romero Campbell had a follow up.
A follow-up to the questions that Councilmember Hines was asking. I'd be curious to know if you all have specific water reduction goals, or if it's just a kind of you're always trying to do better at it situation. And then I believe Arts and Venues is talking to us about setting up a special revenue fund so that they can accept more event sponsorships and things like that, which is always for the old general fund. So I was curious if that's something that Parks could do or has considered doing as well. Thank you.
Sorry, I could hear most of what you said, but the second question was on special revenue funds for accepting sponsorships and donations.
Yeah, so Arts and Venues came in front of us to set up an SRF to be able to do more of that. I don't know, there may be reasons why they differ from Parks, but was curious if that's something that Parks has considered doing as well.
We are fairly sophisticated on the sponsorship and donation front because we get a lot of offers. We fairly recently worked on even our golf specific sponsorship agreement, and so we do, I believe we have all the infrastructure that we need to accept. I feel like now I'm on a Channel 8 infomercial. We will accept every dollar from everyone who would like to sponsor or donate. Thank you to DPR. Please call the number that will appear on the bottom of your screen. Sorry, Channel 8 for the last minute change. I feel like we're fairly sophisticated in that space, and I'm getting nods that we already have that infrastructure set up for that. And then I started with your second.
Water reductions,
that's right. So we're more focused right now on the acres of conversions. Each one is a little bit different on, you know, like what are we converting? How much water use was it? How shady is it? How much do we want to make sure that we're still have an irrigation system to make sure that we don't lose trees while we're doing that? Or is it just, you know, like the Quebec medians, which are all kind of open space? So each one's a little bit different. And so we've been more focused on acres of conversions and kind of the nuts and bolts than on specific water targets so far. But as we get more sophisticated, as we get more of these under our belt, that well may be an area that we can set a goal on as well.
President Pro Tem for the final and close.
Just real quick, thank you for asking about the park maintenance and the reduction there. So just to highlight that and lift it up once more. And then the other question is around the procurement. We have a lot of projects in queue and the procurement process, not only for design and then for build, if there are some efficiencies that could be looked at or, and you don't have to answer that now, but my wondering is other departments are also saying we're doing bundled projects. We're thinking about how that procurement process goes so that it's not just a small project, but that there are multiple things in there. So just a wondering, because there are so many projects in the queue.
We are open to that. We work with Dottie, I mean, if not daily, then weekly, on trying to find those efficiencies. And we are one of their biggest customers when it comes to that stuff. So we are intimately connected with them on trying to make sure that we're doing everything on our side, but also supporting anything that they need to speed up the times on construction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, council members. And if we missed or misstated your question, Angela Casillas has been taking copious notes. All of those notes will go into our messaging. We can send those out to the director for responses next Monday. So Director Clark, any final words? And I'll turn it over to the mayor for the closing.
Again, I'll just thank you, Council, for giving us the opportunity to be here and talk about our awesome parks and recreation system. Give a huge shout out to all of my phone friends who were sitting there nervously hoping that I didn't say, "Do you know the answer to that one?" I mostly was able to answer, but the hard ones that we are saving for later, it is all the super smart people in this room and DPR who answer those questions and work really hard for our residents every day. So a huge shout out to all of them. And so thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council, for the opportunity to be here and present our budget this year.
Any final words?
I just say, obviously, I'm going to have about 27 minutes of prepared comments. I'm walking out anyway. I'm cutting 30 seconds. I just want to say a huge thank you to the Parks and Rec team and to Joel, and obviously thank you so much for the presentation. But also, there are a lot of hard decisions this council has to make, a lot of hard problems the city has to solve. But there are also these incredibly powerful engines of joy the city operates, and that is what you all have made the Parks and Rec infrastructure. I just think of when we were at Civic Center Park last week for an event, sunset in Civic Center Park, walking through that place, you would want to propose to your spouse there, you'd want to bring your mom for a Mother's Day picnic on the park, you'd want to sit and read a book there on a Saturday afternoon. They are just amazing, cherished public spaces, both the Rec Centers and the parks and all of our mountain parks that you all have built and maintained for us so selflessly. So I know there's a lot of hard things to manage, but just want to thank you all for all you've done to make public spaces that this city loves. So thank you all so much.
And thank you, council members. Meeting adjourned.